Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. An interesting day. Got your intern, one of your interns.
One intern here today.
You've been interviewing interns lately. How's that been?
Been going good. Yeah.
What's your favorite part of that?
I don't know.
You excited about the future?
Yes.
I thought you were the future, but now there's a future beyond you.
Yeah, you know, building it. You got to build the brand, building Business Radio X.
That's right.
That's what we're doing.
Well, we're excited. We got two great guests today. We got Bill Harris with BIP Wealth and Larry Carver with Carver & Associates. We're going to kick it off with Bill. Bill, can you tell us a little bit about BIP Wealth? How are you serving folks?
Sure. We're a wealth management firm here in Atlanta. We focus on financial planning, wealth management, and private equity and venture capital.
So what's your favorite part?
My favorite part is working with clients on an individual basis and understanding their goals and objectives and putting a plan in place to help them succeed.
Now, have you always been involved in this industry?
I have. Right out of Georgia Tech, I went into investments with Charles Schwab and Company. So I've been in the business for 20 plus years.
Wow. And so you've seen it evolve a little bit, huh?
Yes, it's been a great experience.
Now, when you're right out of college and you get into this, so what's that like?
Well, it was a little overwhelming at first because you're dealing with people's money.
Right.
And you're trying to help them make good financial decisions and giving them advice. And sometimes it's tough to try to convince someone that's a lot more experienced in the real world, you know, to take advice from a 24-year-old or a 26-year-old. So it's helped along the way, you know, to gain some valuable experiences and to be able to advise clients going forward.
Now, how did, so when you are kind of attacking the world that way, you're young, you have to play that card, right? What are the advantages of being young in that field?
Well, you're not tainted by other experiences and other issues or concerns that arise. And you have a fresh new look on life and you're able to advise clients and give them, you know, a new idea on how to invest their money.
Mm-hmm. So that, it must have been challenging work in that you had to be relentless and you had to be persistent. And there's a lot of weed out in that world, right? A lot of people can't handle that kind of rejection that happens.
Yeah. And it comes along with the business. And as long as you believe in what you do, and you always take the client's best interests at stake, you know, that comes across as being trustworthy, having integrity, you know, which is very important in this line of work.
And then, so you worked for a large firm for a while, and then you went off on your own at some point?
Yeah, I actually spent 11 years at Charles Schwab and Company, and then 4 years at U.S. Trust. And when U.S. Trust was acquired by one of the big global banks, it was at that point that I decided to start my own firm. Mm-hmm. And so I was a co-founder with Mark Buffington, who I had worked well together back at Georgia Tech. He had gone the route of portfolio management, private equity, hedge fund management. I had gone the route of financial planning, client relationships, business development. And so it was a nice connection that we were able to make because he offered a level of service that I needed to take care of my clients. And I could help take care of his clients that he had built up over the years.
And then, so over the years, at some point it became BIP Wealth?
Yes. So we started out as Buckhead Investment Partners. And just over the last couple of months, we've rebranded to BIP Wealth. And we did that for a couple of reasons. One reason is that as we continue to grow and expand the firm, geographically, you know, when you're talking to advisors that want to come join BIP, you know, whether they're in Knoxville or Charlotte or down in Orlando, the Buckhead name may not resonate as well as it would in the Atlanta area. And so
you
that
had to
was
explain it. You had a, you know, you thought it was maybe a geo kind of right. So this way, it broadens your umbrella of who you attract.
Absolutely, and in fact, our sister firm, BIP Capital, is very successful in the venture capital and private equity space. And we thought that there was a little confusion, you know, with Buckhead Investment Partners and BIP Capital. So we wanted to make it simple for our clients, the investors, to really understand the difference between the two firms. So that's why we rebranded to BIP Wealth as opposed to BIP Capital.
And then, so wealth is about people's wealth, and these are individual people that you're serving?
Yes, the majority of our clients are all high net worth individuals. We focus on the financial plan, the investment management strategy, and doing what's in their best interest.
Mm-hmm. And then, so when you're explaining the value proposition to your clients, this kind of relationship is at the core of this, isn't that right?
Absolutely. You know, it revolves around the client, and it's our job to coordinate different aspects of their business. So there's a lot of firms out there that just manage your money. Our job is to coordinate the CPA, you know, and help the client with tax planning issues, work with the estate attorney to work with the estate planning issues. Obviously, the insurance planner and specialist. We don't sell any products, but we advise our clients in all aspects of financial planning.
And then, so you're kind of the quarterback of the client's team?
Yes, I would say quarterback or personal CFO, you know, working for those clients to make sure that they're making good financial decisions in all aspects of their life.
So now when a client starts working with you, and then this might be different than what they've done previously, right? They might have had a different family CFO.
Right. So one of the best comments one of my clients said about a year ago was, you know, where have you been all my life? I didn't realize this type of relationship ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was alluding to was, you know, he was working with a broker that sold him products that just managed the money. And he didn't realize that how we really wrap our arms around every financial aspect of their life.
Now, walk me through how that works out in real life. So like, are you only targeting high net worth? Like, what's the kind of minimum to get at this level of service?
Right. Our stated minimum is $1 million or more to invest.
Mm-hmm.
However, we can make strategic decisions. That was one of the things being a co-founder of the firm, is that I wanted to have some flexibility on who we work with going forward. So, you know, if, like, for example, some of our best clients are a couple of young doctors that are married. One of them's a anesthesiologist, another one's a pediatrician. And as a couple, you know, they may only have, you know, a couple $100,000 to invest right now. But what's amazing is that, you know, we can work with them over time because both of them are making significant income on an annual basis. And so that's a nice strategic relationship that didn't necessarily meet our minimum on the front end, but it won't be too long before they're going to be a great client for BIP.
So now they come in as a couple. The first meeting with you, how do you kind of wrap your arms around their current situation and then kind of build a roadmap for their future?
Well, usually the first 45 minutes of our conversation is really understanding who they are as clients, who they are as people and individuals. What are their goals and objectives? What's important to them? What sort of experiences have they had? What sort of expectations do they have of a financial advisor? And then, you know, as we allow them to talk, we get to know them, whether they have kids, what type of jobs they're in, what sort of great experiences they've had or where they've really struggled along the way. And then we can craft our message and show them the best way that we can potentially partner with them and work with them on a long-term basis.
And then when you're working with them, you mentioned there's certain things that in their current world, they might have kids, might not have kids. They might be working for 10, 20 more years or not. At different stages, you have different objectives. Your objectives have to shift, right? So like, you know, your kids are now grown. Now I want to leave some sort of mark on the world. You know, now I want a legacy of some kind. So that requires a different strategy, I would imagine.
You're absolutely right. And every client relationship is managed on a customized and personalized basis. And it was fantastic because we were going through a financial planning process yesterday with one of our clients. And at the end of the plan, at the end of their lifetime, you know, once they reach 92, 93 years old, they would be passing on about $4.5 million to their kids. And that was a nice wake-up call that showed them the type of safety margin that they have. So instead of maybe spending $150,000 a year, we could run a scenario where they spend $175,000 a year and really improve their current lifestyle.
And because, you know, you can say, oh, we have $4 million in a pile here. That's great. But we can also have $2 million. That'd be great too. So we can do something with that and use the money in a way that maybe leaves a legacy or
absolutely
makes an impact in the community or whatever they'd like to do.
Absolutely. Well, whether it's gifts to the kids, whether it's saving for college and a 529 plan for grandkids, could be philanthropic needs, you know, that or wants that they want to give to a church or a charitable organization. It allows them to have what we call the sleep at night factor, that they know that their financial plan is going to take care of them long term, because we manage a Monte Carlo simulation of 1,000 different market scenarios. So we even do and stress the bad timing of a going through another great recession, you know, a financial crisis like we did in 2008, 2009. Clients like to know what sort of impact that would have on their overall assets too.
Now, when you're working with them, and you mentioned that you're, as the family CFO, you are touching other parts of their lives in terms of insurance or in terms of tax or in terms of legal. How does that all, like, do you have a meeting where you're all like kind of the Mayo Clinic, you're all getting together and you're kind of comparing notes and saying, what do we got? Where do we want to go? This isn't accurate anymore. Their kids are out of college, so they don't need this kind of insurance. Or like, how are you kind of managing all that?
No, you're exactly right. And again, every client, every meeting is very customized and personalized. We have an agenda for each meeting that we go into. There have been occasions where we have a family board meeting where we'll have the CPA, the attorney, the insurance specialist all at one meeting. But in most instances, we separate those, and as we like to touch and work with our clients, you know, whether it's once a quarter or three times a year, sometimes we'll segment, okay, this quarter, let's focus on your estate plan. Let's go sit down with your estate planning attorney, really evaluate your current plan. What can we do to improve it? Are there any changes that we need to make? How has the estate law changed?
So then you can attack every quarter a different element.
Absolutely. That's a comprehensive relationship that mm-hmm. we bring to these clients.
Now, I would say that this level of service is something that people aren't going to get with a lot of these new kind of online, what do they call them? Those
robo-advisors?
Kind of, well, you know, where it's like a magic person or a... Is it a robot? Is it, they try to make it seem like it's a robot? Is that how they're doing it?
Yeah, that's actually very prevalent in this industry. And for someone who's starting out, who is looking to put money away on a monthly basis, maybe have a little bit of cash, it's a great solution.
Like
because,
a set it and forget it.
Exactly. You know, and maybe they're dollar cost averaging in $1,000 a month mm-hmm. or $500 a month into an account to really get started and ramped up. And maybe they don't have all the needs that someone with $1 million might have, you know, right. regarding some complex estate planning or insurance planning or tax planning that they need to do. Those robo-advisors offer great solutions and they're very prevalent within the industry.
Are young people kind of gravitating to them?
I would say it's created a simple solution for Generation Y. Mm-hmm. to get started and get money invested. And as they become more sophisticated and their needs begin to change, it creates fantastic opportunities for advisors like ourselves to really help take them to the next level.
And because at some point their needs are going to become more complex.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be difficult to, you know, answer a multiple choice question to fit their specific scenario in.
Correct. And what we haven't experienced yet with the robo-advisors, because those are relatively new within the last 5 to 7 years, what we haven't experienced is a significant market downturn mm-hmm. or a recession or a pullback in the market, which certainly would have an impact on how people engage with their financial advisor. It's pretty easy to be a financial advisor when the market goes right. up every year.
When a bull market, everybody's a genius, right? Every system works.
Yes.
So now, is there a mistake you see your clients making like time and time again that maybe you'd like to warn them about?
Well, it's not necessarily clients. I would say it's prospective clients when they come see us for the first time. Some of the mistakes that I see is that they don't have a good handle on what their current strategy is, what their goals and objectives are, that they may not understand the fees that they're currently paying in their relationship. They may not have an advisory fee on the surface, but what they might not see is that they might be paying 1.5% to 2% on an annual basis in an expensive mutual fund that they're in. Mm-hmm. And so we really want our clients to be educated and engaged, you know, we want clients that value what we do. And it's not just turn it over to us and let us manage it for, you know, it's a big part of is education. That's why, you know, I really enjoy working with the Generation Y, because we can educate them and really show them, you know, here are important aspects. Here's the impact of dollar cost averaging. This is why you need to be investing on a yearly basis in a Roth IRA for tax-free growth for the rest of your life.
Now, when you're working with people that have different understandings of money specifically, and maybe come from a history where maybe they didn't have a lot of money and now they've come upon a lot of money, how do you kind of help manage them? Because you see so many horror stories, especially with professional athletes, where such a high percentage of them are bankrupt. And it's, you know, for the lay person, it's impossible to understand if they just had a $50 million contract or $100 million contract and now they're broke. How could that possibly occur? But in your line of work, I'm sure your clients probably didn't suffer from that, but you've heard stories about this happening, and it's probably a fear of some of your clients.
Right. I have a lot of passion. My background is playing baseball at Georgia Tech. And so did my business partner, the co-founder, Mark Buffington. And so we realized that we were very good college baseball players, but we weren't ready to go. We weren't able to go to the next level.
You were
to
ready. Play
in the minor leagues.
they weren't ready for you, maybe.
They weren't ready for me. But it was at that point that I've always had in my heart, you know, I want to take care of professional baseball players, professional athletes. And, you know, that we do work with retirees, we work with corporate executives and small business owners and entrepreneurs, but we also work with professional baseball players, and we specialize in that. We understand what they go through, because many of my very closest friends went through that, you know, whether they were coming out of high school or coming out of college. And, you know, every level's different. It's very interesting that even the baseball players that we're working with, we get them engaged. We want to educate them. It's important that they know, you know, what their spending habits are, what their assets, you know, are lined up, what's their strategy, understand what their spending tendencies should be on a month-by-month basis, especially in the off-season when they're not getting paid a salary, and making sure that their money's still working for them and not having, you know, several hundred thousand sitting in a checking account earning virtually zero right now.
But how do you kind of counsel them around their cousin with this great idea that it can't miss?
Sure. We explain to those clients, you know, in this case, specifically baseball players, you know, please let us be the bad guy. You know, please lean on us heavily and say, look, you know, you need to talk to my financial advisor. And so that really removes them from an awkward situation where you have a family member or a close friend that has their hand out. And it puts the onus back on us. And the moment I start asking about a business plan and a pro forma statement, you know,
that shuts things down.
It does. It does. It even happened with my wife when she wanted to start an embroidery business. And I wanted
shut her down.
I wanted to ask her, you know, what is your business plan? And that conversation quickly ended.
So now, have you ever seen one of those cousins or friends from the neighborhood have a plan that you're like, yeah, that sounds good? What's a percentage?
Yeah, I would say it's very small. And you know what's nice is that the baseball players usually have pretty good heads on their shoulders. And so, you know, there have been times where a best friend has stopped working on a full-time basis and now wants to work with the ball player. And I will go the extra mile to help him start a business, him or her to start a business. And to get them think through, you know, starting an LLC, let's make sure we have a good CPA, you know, and so I will help them along that business. Again, this is more about a comprehensive relationship as opposed to just, you know, managing money, and everybody has different needs.
Now, this is always something that I've always wondered about when it comes to financial advisors. You came from Georgia Tech, so you're in the belly of the beast when it comes to, you know, top entrepreneurs here in Georgia. A lot of them started at Georgia Tech. They didn't take the traditional get a corporate job, work for a corporation, and, you know, just kind of work your way up. A lot of them said, you know what? I'm going all in on this kind of shaky business plan with a dream, right?
I mean,
I'm sure you have peers that have rolled the dice in this manner.
Right.
is it ever appropriate, or how do you, there has to be opportunities for people with wealth to say, you know what, I am going to, I'm going to take some of my wealth and I'm going to go for this entrepreneurial dream. I would think what makes your firm unique is that you must have connections with a lot of people that have a lot of resources, and that would be a very big advantage for an entrepreneur if they chose that route to help get something off the ground, or at least vet it to see if it has legs.
No, you're exactly correct. And BIP Capital is one of the strongest venture capitalist firms here in the Southeast. And so that they have a great reputation, but they are also very selective. They have an incredible network. So even if an entrepreneur or an idea is not appropriate for BIP Capital, they usually have two or three introductions that they can make to help that entrepreneur along the way. And that's a nice selling point of our firm, is that, again, more than just money management, you know, we can help people make good financial decisions, but also good life decisions. And so in the financial plan with our existing clients, you know, we will build in a goal to start a new business. And
do more and more people have that as a goal?
I would say it's usually the clients that don't need the money to start a new business. Mm-hmm. It's usually clients that are already well-established, clients that already have a significant amount of wealth, and they just want to do it for the challenge. They want to do it for the excitement of starting a new business. Maybe they're a serial entrepreneur where they've had success along the way and they feel like they've got the right formula in place. So those are exciting clients to work with, because they offer such a wide range of aspiration and dreams.
Now, but is it ever appropriate to have that as part of your wealth, your growth, wealth growing plan? Is, you know what, instead of investing X percent on the speculative stock, I'm going to make the speculative stock me, and I'm going to go for this dream.
Right. And, you know, I would never hear a client say it's speculative money investing on themselves, because most clients say, I believe in myself and I know what I'm capable
of
doing.
Right. But you, as a person that's more objective than they are.
Right.
You would, I would imagine, kind of put it under that pile.
Yeah, I certainly will work with them through a lot of the decision-making facets of what they're trying to accomplish and where they want to go from here. We have had clients come to us looking for capital. And, you know, that is a very different decision that BIP Capital would make as opposed to our wealth management.
Right. So they get to be the bad guy then. Right?
They get to be the bad guy.
So now, what's your ideal client? How do you describe your ideal client?
Our ideal client is a client that values what we do. And it's not necessarily based on how much money you have, but it's somebody that really values what we do and takes advantage of our value proposition. Somebody that is interested in the financial plan, somebody that is looking to have a nice diversified portfolio, somebody who's not looking to time the market, somebody that's not looking for a quick buck, but somebody that has an open mind to investing also in some of these privately held companies. We have some very good investments that we've made along the way, and we've had some companies that have done very well, where we make 4, 5, 6 times our money in a deal. And we have other companies that may not have done so well. So it's important to diversify in your privately held investments too.
And for you, are you fee-based? Are you a blend?
100% fee-based. And what that means is that I'm a fiduciary for our clients, which means any recommendations, any advice that I give them, it's always in their best interest. I'm not compensated based on whether they invest in a stock, a bond, a mutual fund, an exchange-traded fund, a private equity deal, a venture capital fund. We don't get compensated differently. We're not on commission. So it is based on the assets under management that we have.
And then it's that way you're kind of the honest broker and looking out for their best interest at every turn. There's no kind of, like, I get on the back end, I'm going to get a point here or there.
You're exactly right. There's no 12b1 fees. There's no back end loads or deferred loads or anything like that. It's really upfront and transparent, and that's important to us, is to make sure our clients know and understand the type of relationship they're getting into.
Because now you're both have incented in the same manner.
Exactly. We want their assets to grow,
right,
as our fees would continue to increase. But if the market has a pullback, you know, we do not make as much as we did either.
Right. So. And then if somebody wanted to learn more, have more substantive conversation with you, what's the best way to get a hold of you or learn more about the firm?
Yeah, we would love to either have a phone call. The phone number is 404-495-5230. Or you're welcome to reach out to us online at www.bipwealth.com.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, Bill.
I appreciate it, Lee. Thank you.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we got Larry Carver with Carver & Associates. Hey, Larry.
Hi there.
So you learned anything there?
I learned a lot, yes, because finance, as I mentioned, was my worst class in college. So I've learned to follow guys like him. So.
It's important for business owners, right, to get have good financial advice.
It's incredibly important. And we're really tied to the economy in our industry. So things go up and down. So we need a strong hand to guide us sometimes.
So tell us a little bit about Carver Associates. How do you serve folks?
Our company outfits hotels. We buy furniture, fixtures, and equipment, operating supplies and equipment, and we have 23 designers on staff. And basically, if someone wants to build a hotel, we work with the owner and or work for the owner and with the designers and the architects. And it's a team effort hopefully create the design that the owner wants and get the brand to approve it and coordinate all the activities involved in getting it open.
Now, when you talked about the hotel, are you talking about the entrepreneur who runs that specific hotel or is it the large brand that is the franchisor of the hotel?
Our client is the owner. And our biggest, our best client is the management company or the developer that might have 15 or 20 or 30 or 40 hotels.
Of the same brand?
Different brands.
So it would be different.
Yeah. We work with virtually all the brands. Since IHG came to Atlanta in the mid-90s, they've been a very good source of business for us. And Hilton also is probably number two. But we're a fiduciary also. We work for the owner. And our job is to get him the best value. And he chooses the brand.
So then walk us through what that process is like. So a person, this is their business. They own hotels all over the world typically. And then they say, okay, we want to open one up in Vegas. And then they call you up. And
well, most of them are regional players. We do have a couple of good clients. Noble Investment here in Atlanta is one that they have hotels all over the place. And we have four offices in the United States, but we also have offices in the Middle East and in Korea and Canada and Mexico. So we try to work on projects that are within our offices' geographical area, typically.
And then, how do you begin the process? Do you ask how much money you got, how many rooms you want to?
We're in a very specialized business, and hotel owners are unique animals, and a lot of entrepreneurs also, but most of them are very professional, and they've run the numbers. They know if a hotel is going to work or not, and they work closely with the brand to decide. For example, if you're working with Hilton, you've got a choice of Hilton Garden Inn or Homewood Suites or various other brands, and the brand really dictates what you can put where. And once they decide on the quality level and the style that they want, then that's when we come on board and work with them to develop the budgets and also in a lot of cases we'll do the interior design as well.
And then so what is the kind of your view of the hospitality industry today? Are you bullish?
It is great. It really is. The business is fantastic right now. And we are so tied to the economy. And it's a roller coaster industry. It really is. We've been through a lot of recessions over the years. When the savings and loan crash happened, that really nailed us. 9/11 killed us. And then this last financial meltdown in 2008 just destroyed our business. And it was ridiculously terrible for 3 years.
So when you say destroyed, that means nobody's building anything.
People quit building. Yeah. We depend a lot on discretionary income. For the travelers to.
It's not the typical traveler isn't a business person. It's for entertainment.
Both, all things. When I first started, I was with the Portman organization, and we did nothing but really huge, big convention hotels. But when I became when I went out on my own, it didn't take long to realize that we need to broaden our base. So we do resorts, we do casinos, we do business projects. All kinds of hotels, and so the traveling public is varied, and the reason for them renting a room is varied.
Now, what about the kind of the Airbnb of the world? How does that impact the business?
A lot. It's kind of the enemy of the hotel industry, really. It's taken a chunk out of our industry, but even with that, business right now is amazingly strong. Evidently, hotels are good investments, which they haven't always been, and a lot of hotels are being bought and sold right now, and a lot of funds are being put together strictly for hospitality transactions. And every time a hotel is bought or sold, that's a job for us. So we're very bullish on the market, and I think the smart people say we've got maybe another couple of years before it planes.
And then, so like, what is it like when you're deciding, or when the owner is deciding where or why to put a hotel in a given market? So what are they looking at? What are leading indicators for them to decide if this is a good idea?
Well, that really dictates what kind of property they wind up doing, whether it's a business hotel in a business office park community like this, or close to a resort, close to an airport. Each one of those markets dictates a different kind of property. And so they look at the market, they look at the brand. The brand really guides a lot of owners and says, okay, for this area, you should have a Hilton Garden Inn, for example, or a Courtyard by Marriott, because it's a very heavily concentrated business area. Resorts, of course, that's a different criteria. So it really depends on the kind of property that is going to fit best in that piece of land.
But like I read recently, I don't know if you're involved in this or not, but I read recently, like downtown in Centennial Park area, they're looking at a Margaritaville kind of resort.
Yeah, they are.
So now, how that wouldn't occur to me that that's a Margaritaville environment.
And sometimes I wonder about the rationale that goes into these things, but there are a lot of smart people that figure this stuff out. And since our job is to furnish them,
you're like, go for it.
We don't have to operate them, right? Yeah.
So sometimes it's not obvious. So sometimes they're doing their own math, looking at different things. I'm just trying to understand what is the trigger that's like, you know what? It's time for a Margaritaville here. Like something happened. You know, I guess all of the museums, or they're attracting more families.
Well, yeah,
or something.
Exactly. The folks that look at the market and that put the pro formas together really know this industry. Our industry has become a lot more professional over the last 20 or 30 years, and these guys can pretty much put the numbers together, and they know what's going to happen when they build it.
And then, are you seeing, like in this area in Sandy Springs, we need more extended stay because there's a lot more businesses open and where they're going to bring people in. And so they're going to need places to stay.
Extended stay is one part of the business that is underserved right now. Just not only here, but virtually everywhere. It's a relatively new concept, and I'd say 20 years. And a lot of the brands have only recently gotten into it. So the demand is a lot stronger than the supply right now.
Now, how do you kind of manage the government regulations? Is that a challenge, or is that something that is not really that important?
Not really. I mean, they constantly change. The American Disabilities Act, for example, made a lot of changes necessary in our industry. The brands are very cognizant of safety requirements, and we have to get every hotel we do approved by the brand, make sure that we're adhering to their standards and construction criteria and that sort of thing. Overall, it's government regulations don't really affect us that much. The owner, yes, but mm-hmm. for us, they really don't.
Now, what about transportation? How does that come into play with, you know, like, are you near mass transit, or is there a shuttle that goes around to different, you know, things around the area? Is that, do you have to manage that?
Once again, no, we don't. The operator does. The owner does. But that is definitely a factor in when they plan their hotel. If it's close to an airport, shuttle is critical.
Right. And, but even here in Sandy Springs, there's a shuttle that goes around to different office parks, hotels, that they just kind of make their own kind of shuttle transit system.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a local decision. Mm-hmm. The hotel owners get together and decide what the region or the area needs, and then attempt to fix it, solve it.
Now, what's the most rewarding part of you or of your job?
When it's done. This business is a fun business to be in. It's very casual. Everybody is really friendly, but it's tense because it's deadline driven. Everything has to be there at a given time, and you plan a year in advance to have product manufactured when it needs to come off the assembly line. So it can get very tense, especially toward the end when you've got all the other trades in there and you're trying to get the hotel open. But when it's all done and you take a look at it and wow, we had something to do with this. It's really kind of, right. It's really kind of cool.
Now, what's the challenge of working with the manufacturers?
In our industry, the manufacturers are very specialized. We work with case goods companies, upholstered seating, lighting. All of these companies are, for the most part, pretty small, and they're specialized in the hospitality industry. It's a lot different than retail, where retail will build 5,000 of this chair or 5,000 of this table. Our manufacturing runs are maybe 100, 200 pieces, 500 pieces. And so you're dealing on a customized product that's being built to service one specific building. And
they have to be built kind of last because there's going to get a lot of use?
Oh, definitely. A contract chair, for example, is a lot more robust than one you'd find in IKEA.
Right.
They have to be because there's a lot of liability. If a chair breaks, then somebody's going to get sued. So you really have to make sure that it's properly constructed and is going to hold up in a commercial environment.
Right. So there are small runs, but they have to be built very well.
Absolutely. Yes, they do.
So the quality has to be very high. Now, are you able to leverage any of the 10,000 manufacturers here in Georgia or your manufacturers elsewhere?
We are in a global industry, and we buy product from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And used to be 20 years ago, when we first got into business in Korea, for example, that was 1993, we did projects in Seoul, but everything was manufactured in the United States, and we exported to Korea. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen anymore. Virtually, 80% of what we buy now comes from either Asia, South America, some places like that. But the differential between a Chinese product and an American product is getting smaller, and manufacturing is starting to come back to the United States.
Now, for you in the growth of your company, what were you looking? Just keep globally growing or more here in the United States? Or
yes. That's another reason that we're all over the place, because right now the Middle East is very hot. Mexico is not. So we want to broaden our base and be able to serve the markets that need us. And so when we look at a new area, we try to partner or find a partner that is really strong. We just started in Dubai and Saudi Arabia about a year and a half ago. That region is still growing. So we're doing a lot of work there.
And then how do you penetrate a new region? Is it you work with somebody who just moves into that area and then you kind of come along for the ride?
If we're going into a new country, we partner with someone who's already strong there. The partner that we have in Dubai, for example, is he has offices in Riyadh and Dubai and India, and he's very strong in logistics and shipping. And so that's a big part of what we do. And so if we can find a good partner that is strong where we're not, then that's who we like to team up with.
So supply chain is an important component of your business. You have to be good at that in order to execute.
That is critical to our business. We have two business models. We work on bigger hotels. We work strictly on a fee base. We're fiduciary also. And so our job is to show the owner all the options available in the marketplace. So we'll take the specifications and bid it really to the world. And we'll get 8 or 10 or 20 or 12 bids for a given product and present it to the owner and make a recommendation. But it's the owner's final decision. They say, well, I like this guy. So we contract on behalf of the owner with the manufacturer, and then we do all the coordination and make sure that the finishes are correct, and we monitor the manufacturing, schedule the deliveries, and arrange for installation.
And then your kind of secret sauce is that you've been doing this so long and you have contacts and resources all over the planet.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's really what our key to success, I think, is we've been doing it a long time. We've got a really strong staff, and we buy a lot of product, and once again, we're in a specialized industry. There aren't that many companies that do what we do.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you worked with the Portman company early in your career. What do you think of Atlanta's growth? You must have seen it kind of explode over the years.
It's phenomenal, and the Portman organization was a great place to learn business because everything was in-house: architecture, engineering, interior design, and a good bit of operations. And so it was a great classroom to be in. And plus, he built beautiful, big hotels. So and he virtually changed downtown Atlanta. So it's been a remarkable journey, really, over the last 40 years.
But could you imagine the kind of the expansion of Atlanta from where it was to where it is now? And it seems like it's never going to end.
No,
it's the edges just keep getting farther out.
It's mind boggling, isn't it? Yeah, no, I never would have believed it. I moved here in 72, I think, and 85 was two lanes in each direction. It's changed a lot.
Right. And there's no end in sight.
I think you're right. Atlanta has a great future.
There's no boundary or, you know, natural boundary.
It does sprawl a little bit, yeah. And if we could just do something about the traffic, that would
You'll
be great.
Fix that.
Oh, yeah. We'll take care of that.
Next act in your career, right?
No, I think I'm going to stay where I'm at.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. If somebody wanted to learn more about your firm or get involved and talk to you, what's the best way to learn more?
Go online, carverassoc.com, carverassoc.com.
All right, Larry. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.